Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Komen, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Klempire, with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet.
Yeah,
welcome, Manny.
The future is unwritten.
That's what they say.
You know, it's unwritten, and I want to add some verbs to it.
Okay. Nouns, too, huh?
Nouns and verbs.
Nouns, verbs.
We'll see what happens.
Consonants,
next week,
vowels.
Or so, yeah.
Yeah, I saw another guy came out today throwing
Duplessis.
His hat in the ring. Yeah, exactly. Royce Duplessis.
Royce Duplessis. That's kind of a cool name.
Yeah, he's
Royce
got
Duplessis.
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, I wonder what his slogan will be.
I don't know.
Hop on board the Rolls Royce.
Okay.
Maybe that would be a good one for him. I don't know. What is Duplessis? What is that French?
It is French.
It's French.
I'm not sure what it means, but
yeah,
something about two. I don't know. just taking a
now,
stab
so
in the dark.
So it's two Plessis.
Yes, yeah, two, exactly.
What's a Plessy?
I don't know.
Yeah, if anyone out there knows what a Plessy is, give us a call real
yeah,
quick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let us know over the internet, the computer stuff.
Well, so when they were announcing on television his you know addition to the lineup of candidates, they showed the whole field there.
Yeah, how many are there now?
There's like seven or eight.
Okay, that's usually the case.
It's getting pretty lively.
When the incumbent can't run again, that's what happens. You get a lot.
Everybody
of
jumps in.
You get a lot of people saying, "Hey, maybe I got a shot."
Well, they have this one guy, and I saw. Are you familiar with all the candidates?
No, I haven't.
So I saw him. And I'm like.
Ones.
It's this guy, Ricky Twiggs.
Ricky Twiggs.
I was like, Ricky Twiggs.
That's an interesting name.
It might actually be Ricky Twiggs Jr., just to not be confused with Ricky Twiggs Sr. But I thought, what's that guy's story? So I actually did some research just in the last hour or so and started looking him up. And he's an interesting little fellow there. You know, he's not a joke candidate, although...
When you say little fellow, does that mean like a midget?
Well, he's a slight guy.
He's
a slight build. Yeah. He's a younger kid, you know. I guess he's in his 20s, maybe late
20s. Oh, well, good for him.
But he has an interesting, not a political background. Apparently, he brought 3D printing. He does a lot of consulting jobs.
Oh.
But really, when I looked at it and looked at his material, I thought, and I was playing one of them out loud, my wife said, that sounds like AI.
Oh.
I said, you're right, it does sound like AI.
So maybe he's not a real candidate?
He might just be an AI candidate, as far as I can tell.
I bet he gets the most votes.
He might.
He might get the most
Well, you know, I saw something on the internet recently that there's a band that's completely made up AI band that has gotten like 500,000 streams on Spotify in the last 2 weeks.
Now, what does AI stand for?
Artificial intelligence.
Oh, okay. Which this whole world is based on now, right?
Well, I mean, it seems to be getting there. I mean, this show is completely untouched by, I said this before, by artificial intelligence.
Yeah, or any intelligence.
Or any intelligence at all in many cases.
Now, Ricky Twiggs... Did you see a bio on him? Does he? What's his age?
Well, I haven't seen like any official thing. I just did a little quick cursory
Google
search.
And he's officially going to run.
He's running as an independent candidate.
Now we'll have to see because qualifying is next week between Wednesday and Friday.
Okay.
If this person is just AI, is someone going to come in and say, "I'm Ricky Twiggs"? And have to sign all the paperwork and pay the fees.
Well, I would say he must have already done that for the.
No, you can't do it until the 9th and the 11th. Even though, like Helena,
they've announced,
they haven't qualified.
Ah, okay.
Because qualifying is from July 9th to 11th.
Okay.
Anyone can say, "Yeah, I'm running for mayor."
Right.
But until they qualify and pay the fee, then they're not on the ballot.
Well, I wonder why WDSU is already showing these people. I mean, they didn't have Nooney Man up there. I'm guessing that he's probably going to run again.
Well, yeah, sure. Nooney's a good guy. But no, because these candidates, these are the big wigs, the ones with the money. And they announce, "I'm going to run." And, hey, what's happening, brother?
All right, man.
All right. I'm going to run, but yet I haven't officially
Okay.
Be put on the ballot until you pay that fee. Because that's why I never announce it. Why I could anyone could announce it. I
mean, right, right.
Two years ago, I could have said, I'm running for mayor in 2025. Well,
might not have been a bad idea. Get the jump on him, you know?
Well, I'm a busy guy.
I know. You're waiting until the last minute to decide.
I'm not doing the last
keeping
minute
us
to
all
do anything.
In, sure,
You know? But I hope, I don't know, I don't think he can run, but maybe this Twiggs guy will get... Massey as his running mate, the guy who just got caught.
Right, Antoine Massey.
Antoine Massey, yes. That's right. There's one guy left. One escapee.
Yeah, Groves. The guys.
And I'm sure he's like next door right now.
Well, probably so.
Massey was just in your kind of close to where you
was
live.
Was he?
In Holly Grove.
Oh, was he in Holly Grove? Yeah. I saw the takedown, but I couldn't tell where they were. I missed the beginning.
They were
of
in Holly Grove.
Oh, okay. Which, right, in my neighborhood. Yeah.
So he'd been there, and, money talks. So I don't care how close you are to somebody, but if someone says, I'll give you 50 grand to tell me where this fucker is,
sure.
I'll say yes. Sure.
Yeah.
So. He's done, and he was the mastermind of the great OPP escape.
Okay.
Right? Or OPS, what is it?
Yeah, it's Orleans Parish, or Orleans.
Now, here's the
Justice
deal.
Center. Yeah.
He was arrested for domestic abuse.
Uh-huh.
Now, the girl who he abused apparently was helping him hide out.
Yeah, so.
So, what if she says.
All's forgiven.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Can they charge him still? They can charge him with escape.
Oh, well, yeah.
But they can't charge him with abusing her if she says, it's all right.
Well,
I kind of dig it.
The state could charge him, but she definitely charge her with
abetting,
all kind of stuff.
You know.
Have her under the jail, man.
They seem like good people.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I think I might get tattoos on my face when I run.
Wow.
You know, just yes and no.
Okay.
I don't know, on each cheek.
Right?
I don't know.
So
we'll see what happens.
Turn the other cheek.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Okay.
Because I'm getting a little too old for it. And the paperwork. So much paperwork.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I always lean, towards not running because of the paperwork. You know, it's a lot of paperwork. And I don't have the staff.
Yeah.
I don't have staff, so.
I hear you.
Anyway, what else is going on?
Well, apparently the Diddy verdict has come in, but they just can't tell us what it is.
Oh, okay.
Because it's a partial verdict, so they can't decide on the RICO count. They're trying to just submit the verdict on the other four counts or something, and
if he does get convicted, I'm sure he'll plead to our fearless leader to get him out.
He could very well get a pardon. Yeah,
get a pardon from our
fearless
leader.
Seems like the kind of guy that would get pardoned.
Yeah, and our fearless leader would pardon that kind of guy. Like but yeah, we'll see what happens. My testimony apparently didn't do shit.
Didn't sway the jury.
Far as I know.
Be the thing that's hanging them up.
I kept complaining about the room they put me up in New York.
I could see that.
They said, well, Mr. Chevrolet, did you see Mr. Combs do this? I go, you put me up in a Holiday Inn. I have to go down for breakfast. I can't get room service. I was complaining a lot about that.
Now you want to know my opinion.
Yeah, now you want to.
You weren't interested in my opinion when you were booking the room, were you?
Right,
Now
anyway,
I can do something for you. All right.
New York owes me one. I got the DA's office in New York owes me.
It's probably a two-way street, man.
Yeah, that's true. I lived there in the 80s, so there's a lot of stuff I got away with.
We've all done some favors. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I don't know. You had something?
Well, I discovered something very interesting and curious. And I think it might be one of my campaign things to promise the people of this great parish.
Okay.
Orleans, right?
Yes,
Orleans
that's
Parish.
Where we are.
Now, in Finland, did you know in Finland, they're the shyest people in the world. They don't cause trouble. They don't want to do anything.
They just want to drink.
They want to drink, and they want to watch TV and drink and eat their raw fish or whatever they do. I don't know what they do. I've never been to Finland, but I hear they're very shy people. But do you know that they have a law in Finland? If you get caught speeding in your car, and they have the same speed limits as we do.
Okay.
Maybe not Germany or, But anyway... But if you get caught speeding, your fine that you get for speeding is based on your income.
Really?
Yeah. So if you're like a person who only makes like maybe $15,000 a year, you're a part-time worker, you get caught speeding, your ticket might be like 20%, you know, like $30. But if you're like a millionaire in Finland and you get caught speeding and you make $5 million a year, your speeding ticket could be like $250,000.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
That's
kind of cool, I think.
Well, I mean, yeah, it would kind of, you know, try to equalize the pain that people would feel relative to their ability
right,
to pay.
Right, exactly. Because, you know, this rich fuck, he says, oh, I own the road, man. I own this car. You know, boom. I'm doing 90 in a 40. You know, so it's like you got to, you know, dude, you're making $2 million a year or $5 billion. Your fine's $200,000 for that speeding ticket.
So it's a progressive traffic citation.
I read this
regime
over the weekend and I thought, well, that seems kind of cool, you know? But then again, you don't want like people just going like, you know, like turtles on the highway. You know, so afraid to be
under
pulled
the speed limit.
Yeah, under the speed limit.
Well, now the rich guy, I'm sure, would say, well, since I'm making $5 million a year, I'm already paying way more taxes. I'm already subsidizing this highway way more than this person.
Well,
who
that
makes
could be his argument.
$15,000.
But they're very shy people. They're not going to argue.
They're just going to take it.
Take it.
Okay.
Take it. Okay. I agree. You know, that kind of stuff.
Right, see, I'm not Finnish. I don't
know. I'm not Finnish either. I'm not even
disposition
done yet. You know, but anyway, so I thought that was kind of curious. You
all
know,
right.
That,
that's an interesting tidbit.
You know, if the Trouble Nation wants to weigh on this, you know, their opinion on that,
yeah,
I'd be more than happy to listen.
Sure, yeah.
You know.
Now, we've had some, a few deaths recently. It seems like it's happening all the time. I mean, people that I care about, there's people dying all the time, but most of them I don't care about.
Right.
But, you know, we had Brian Wilson, you know, last week.
Yeah, we talked about
him. So we talked about him.
Yeah. Sly Stone,
yeah, to cover them. Now, now recently, someone that passed away since the last show was, I know you're a big fan of, Lalo Schifrin.
Yes, Lalo Schifrin.
Lalo, in fact, the great Lalo
he
Schifrin.
He was one of our topics in one of our first episodes,
Yeah,
Lalo Schifrin passed away in
great
90.
Composer, wrote the theme to Mission Impossible, to Mannix, another great theme in three.
Yeah, he did Dirty Harry.
Yeah, all the Dirty Harry movies, the scores for all that. Did score for Cool Hand Luke, for Bullet. Lots and lots of films.
I think
had
he did his last one about 8 years ago was his last one. I can't remember the film or the TV show, but it was some kind of Halloween picture, I think, he did music for. But, you know, you got to love that name, Lalo.
Yeah, yeah.
Lalo is a good name. It sounds like a grandfather or grandmother, you know. Oh, my mama Lalo. You know? My papa Lalo. You know?
When you say it like that,
yeah.
Well, cool, he's Argentinian. So,
is he really?
Yeah, that's...
okay, well, that changes my opinion.
Oh, okay.
All right. Anyway, he passed. He was a good friend of mine.
Right.
I love his music.
Yes.
Yeah, he was a good guy. And also, I think, I don't know if this was true or not, but remember that pop star of the 60s?
Bobby Sherman.
Yeah. He died.
Julie, Do You Love Me?
Yes.
Yeah, he died also. Now, what was his big hit?
Julie, Do You Love Me? Was
That's right.
And,
yeah.
And you know, he was on the Monkees before.
He was on the Monkees before they were chimps. Right? I don't know. Anyway, Bobby Sherman died. And I remember the last thing I ever saw about him, I think he was on a Love Boat or something. That's the last time I saw him.
That makes sense.
You know,
I think he became an EMS.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so, unless I have that wrong.
He got first in line when he died, right?
No.
EMS.
Right, he had an inside track.
Yeah, well, he was on the guest list.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know, I always confuse Bobby Sherman with the guy that was on Partridge Family.
Oh, David Cassidy.
David Cassidy.
David, and then was Sean, who wasn't a Partridge Family guy, but David Cassidy.
David Cassidy, yeah. They were almost the same dude. I mean, as far as like the way they had the same kind of shag haircut, same...
Yeah, they were the same kind of pop stars.
Same era.
Bobby always seemed like, as David was like the son, Bobby was kind of like the the uncle or something, maybe.
Yeah, he wasn't on like a Western show or something.
Yeah, something like that. But I don't know. I mean, so he became an EMS. He never did cruises or Vegas or anything.
He might have done.
I'm
not sure.
That's where they all go. They all go to the cruises.
Right. You know? The oldie shows. Yeah. Well, speaking of oldie shows, a guy who passed a couple of weeks ago, and I keep forgetting to mention it, but now that we have this guest on, it's perfect time, is a giant of pop music, Lou Christie.
Oh, yeah.
And so Lou Christie, you know, you might not recognize the name, but you know his biggest hit, Lightning Strikes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, with a real high falsetto.
Yeah, kind of based on the Frankie
Valli.
They
were based out of Philly, weren't they? Or?
He was from Pittsburgh. But he might have made his records in Philly, man. That's a good guess. But I think maybe Lightning Strikes was kind of later
was
on.
Was that a band or that was just
him?
Him, so.
Lou Christie. That's him. And the single Lightning Strikes is so great. Now he co-wrote the song with his he had this woman co-writer, Twyla Herbert, who he wrote with for 30 years, and she is the co-writer on that song.
That's an amazing song.
And that's their only hit? They co-wrote for 30 years?
No, he had other hit records. But
Lightning Strikes Three Times.
Lightning Strikes Again.
Another
hit was I'm Gonna Make You Mine. That was a hit for him. Two Faces Have I. That's not one of my favorites, but it was, somebody liked it.
Yeah.
It's a top 10 record. But, so I was listening to Lightning Strikes today before we came to I was just really reveling in all the moments of it where, you know, it's a big apologetic for, this guy saying, yes, I love this girl, but, you know, I just can't help myself because, you know, when I see lips begging to be kissed, I can't stop because, and then it has the tic-tac bass solo by, I think, Howard Roberts.
Oh, wow.
Oddly enough. Anyway, getting really in the weeds here. Everybody check it out. And then right up till today, we lost the great Jimmy Swaggart. With the New Orleans tie-in, Louisiana tie-in, Jimmy Lee Swaggart, first
Jerry
cousin
Lee
of
Lewis.
Jerry Lee and Mickey Lee Gilly. Yeah, okay. They were all, Jerry Lee used to point out that he and Jimmy were double first cousins.
Okay.
And if you look up in Jerry Lee's autobiography, whatever is written with somebody, he explains how the math that you have to undergo for that to be true, and it was. Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, wow. Good for Jerry Lee and Jimmy Swaggart. Yeah, his son. Does he still have a church? Does the family take over his church?
I think he still had a ministry, you know. I don't know. But he was 90 years old. I don't know how much he was doing recently. But, you know, he would come back from every prostitute scandal. I mean, there were two major ones.
And they still give him money.
Well, you know, he was, to me, I still have a soft spot in my heart for Jimmy Swaggart, I got to say. He said he was sorry. He repented. That's the whole, if the whole basis of your religious belief is repentance, then he's good, man.
Yeah. Like they say, if you believe in God, you'll believe in anything.
Okay.
So that's what they say. And Jimmy, he seemed like an all right guy. I don't know. I didn't know him, but.
Yeah, I liked his piano playing.
Jimmy played piano too.
Oh yeah. That was a big part of it, and his singing too. And he made records. He was a recording artist.
What was the name of his church? Channel he was on.
Well, I think he was a part of the Assembly of God. I think that was the sect that he was. But you know,
I'm going to start one called the De-Assembly of God. How's that?
There you go, man.
Yeah.
I don't think it's taken.
No, it hasn't. Because everyone's a sucker. But listen, you know, on the way, before I came here, I was, had some dinner, I had some fish, and I went to use the bathroom, and I was taking a leak, and I thought to myself, have you ever tried jerking off while you're pissing?
No.
Have you ever tried that?
I don't think that's going to work.
I mean, I tried it.
It didn't work, though, did it?
Well, I got an erection.
Ooh, that doesn't sound good either.
And the piss was still coming out.
That sounds terrible.
Because I had a bunch of water. And but
you could have done the math on that ahead of time. You could have seen how where that was.
I ended
going.
Up leaving a mess for my wife in the bathroom.
Okay, well, okay. Something to remember you by.
Yeah.
Nice. So,
anyway.
Okay.
I just thought, has anyone ever done that? You know.
I mean, you know, anything you can think of, someone has tried before. But
yeah.
Is it a good idea? Not necessarily.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you found out the hard way, Manny.
Yeah. Well, I'm still semi-hard right now.
Semi-hard way.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe we should get to our guest here.
Yeah,
huh?
Get to our guest, because he's exciting to me.
Yeah. He's a good guy. I like the way he understands how when you laugh on a show, you laugh into the microphone. You don't move the microphone away from your mouth. Many of our guests have not picked up on that showbiz element.
Even though 90% of them are in showbiz.
Are in show business. Yeah, I know.
Still
I know.
Don't
it's
get
shocking.
It.
It's shocking.
Yeah.
Anyway, so our guest is a terrific indie pop songwriter, singer, multi-instrumentalist, producer, the mastermind behind his group, the Junior League. He's also a power pop maven. He's also worked with groups such as Donovan's Brain and Scott McCoy's Minus Five, who also counts Peter Buck of REM as one of the members. He's released over a dozen records, and his latest record is excellent. Record called Our Broadcast Day. It came out last October, a really beautiful record. We're going to get into all that and much more, but without further ado, the great Mr. Joe Adranya. Welcome,
hey
Joe.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Adranya.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that name before. Is that a Croatian?
Italian.
Italian. Okay. Now, last week I said to somebody, is that a Greek? And he said Italian. So
it's close, right? Because it sounds Greek almost.
Yeah. Well, you know, I saw in one of the spellings of your name, it didn't have that internal A.
Oh.
Did you have to buy that vowel?
I just forgot to type it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
But Greece and Italy, very close.
Yes. Well, Italy, the Rome inherited the culture of Greece. You know, Rome was a Hellenistic culture.
So you're
ways.
From here?
I'm from New York originally.
Oh, okay. What part of New York?
The city? Long Island.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I grew up out east on Long Island. Right. Yeah.
Okay. So I think you're maybe about me and Manny's age. That's the vibe I'm getting from listening to your latest record.
Yeah. 52.
Oh, no. You're much younger than us.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was... Because in our broadcast day, the year 1973 plays a very pivotal role. Now, is that the year you were born?
That is the year I was born. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you see, I remember 1973. I mean, I wasn't driving yet, but, you know, I was pretty much as I am now, pretty fully formed.
I was smoking, though, in 73.
Yeah.
I was smoking.
Manny and I were 10.
Yeah. You know, the 70s, like... You know, even if you were in the, like I was a kid in the late 70s, it still felt like it was the late 60s anyway. And
so,
early 70s,
because
it was all
growing
reruns.
Up in Los Angeles, you know, I had older siblings who were hippies, you know.
Okay.
Sure.
So for me, you know, I had long hair when I was 10 and stuff like that. And I didn't really cop to their bullshit until I was like maybe 15 or something like that. And I found my own scene.
Yeah.
Got into punk rock and you realize, God, all you dirty hippies.
Yeah, it's like exactly. Never trust a hippie. You know,
yeah.
Kind of stuff. Anyway, but my mom and dad encouraged me to take my own road and stuff like that. And it's all good, as they say. So Long Island, New York.
Yeah.
And you're influenced by who? As in 1973, you're born, right?
I'm born.
And in 83, what are you listening to? You have siblings who are influencing you're an only child?
I have a younger sister, so I was the oldest. And
okay.
So when the first thing that hit me was when I was 4, I heard the Beatles.
The Beatles.
And that was it. It was like the way people like have like religious like experiences. That was it. When I heard the Beatles on, you guys are familiar with, if you know, well, in New York, they used to have a radio station called WCBS-FM.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first of its kind, a quote unquote oldies station.
Okay.
So they play like everything from like 55 to
that
about
was
64.
AM or FM?
FM. 101.1. Okay. And my dad used to listen to it all the time in the car. And one day I was pretending to drive, sitting on his lap, in a 1975 Ford Granada.
Nice.
And I Want to Hold Your Hand came on.
Oh,
And that was it. I remembered it. I would sing it for like days. I was singing that song, and my parents were like, just buy this kid
old.
A Beatles record. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was it, because I just thought it was the greatest thing. I just would not stop talking about the Beatles, and that
now,
was it.
Now, you'd heard other pop music before then.
Yeah.
What was it, do you think, about that record that caught you like that?
It's exciting.
Uh-huh.
I think it's exciting. I think early Beatles is exciting music. I think people that saw them on Ed Sullivan for the first time in 64, I imagine, had that same reaction if they were prone to liking that kind of thing, you know? And I was no different. I just didn't see it on TV.
Right.
I heard on the radio.
Right.
And it was just, there was something about it. I can't explain it. But then that was it. And then my parents bought me, at the time, the rock and roll compilation, which looked like a 50s throwback. It was really weird. Are you familiar with that compilation? It looked like, because Happy Days was big, you know?
Uh-huh, right.
And I love the Fonz like everybody else at that
sure.
point. And it looked like American Graffiti, and it was like totally, you know, not the right thing.
It was a compilation of just
Beatles stuff, like all their rock and roll, like Twist and Shout, I Saw Her
right.
Standing There.
Okay.
But then it had weird stuff like Hey Bulldog and like Taxman, like album cuts, and it was fantastic. And I just listened to it over and over.
Is that
and
the
over.
First, there's two albums that they're on a balcony looking down?
Those are the Red and the Blue albums.
Okay, yeah.
I got those later on too.
Yeah,
those are great too. That used to scare me. Like when I was a kid,
when
you flip it over, because John with the beard, like he scared me when I was little.
Oh.
Because in the late 70s, I accidentally saw that Helter Skelter TV movie.
Mini
remember
series,
that?
In 77,
yeah. With Steve Railsback, who was
Steve
scary.
Railsback.
And so it just scared the
is that
shit
Powers
out of me
Booth
when I was a kid.
Is Vincent Bugliosi.
Yeah.
That was
a heavy TV movie, man.
Well, it was a heavy time, man. Imagine Manny and I remember
Powers
living through
Booth
that.
As Jim Jones in the series?
No.
Oh, that's...
That came out in the early 80s. That's brilliant.
That's one
I'll
of his greatest roles.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, Powers Booth is Jim Jones.
Wow.
What kind of name is that? Powers Booth.
A great one.
Yeah.
I wish I had that name.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine what your life would be like if your name was Powers? You know?
What if it was like John Powers Booth, the guy who killed... You know, I don't think you want to be associated with that.
No, I don't.
You
know, I don't.
Depends.
I don't think he did much theater, Powers Booth. You think? I don't know.
John Wilkes Booth? He wasn't.
John Wilkes Booth.
Well, yeah, John Wilkes Booth was an actor. You know, he's an angry actor. He couldn't get a gig. He had a bad agent, I think. You know, back then. So you're 4 years old. You discover the Beatles, and then. 4 years, so it's late 70s. The Beatles are broken up. John Lennon gets murdered.
I remember that.
How do you feel about that?
Terrible. So I was eight when John Lennon, I think I was eight. Yeah, seven or eight when he got killed. And what's weird is that my dad took me to see Beatlemania in late November of 1980. I remember going, it was in Hempstead, which is about an hour from where I grew up. And it was amazing. You can imagine being that age and you love the Beatles, and then there's these guys that look and sound just like them. You're just like, holy crap.
Was that the Marshall Crenshaw version?
No,
okay.
It was the Mitch Weissman, I think, was playing John or Paul. I don't remember, but it wasn't the Marshall. I wish. That would have been cool. But and then a couple of weeks later, my grandfather used to work in the city. He was a carpenter, and he used to go in really early.
Yeah.
And he called my folks at like 4 a.m. and he said, you better wake the kid up. John Lennon got killed last night.
Oh, he knew it was going to be a shock to you.
Yeah, and so my parents woke me up at like 4:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And had to sit me down like, Joey, we got to tell you, you know.
Oh,
and
man.
I cried. I mean, I was, you know.
He was your favorite Beatle?
At the time, yeah.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, it was my first, fortunately, I mean, I'm really lucky that was my first experience with any kind of death. And later on, of course, you experienced that on. But it was, and then I went to school.
You died on stage a lot, right?
Well, yeah. That's right. I went to school and like everybody made fun of me. they were like, I'm glad you got shot. You know, like stupid shit. Because kids are idiots.
Really?
You know? It sucked.
Yeah.
But
well, I was watching Monday Night Football, Miami versus New England, and Howard Cosell goes, you know, Mr. Cosell goes, I've got a horrible announcement. And he said John Lennon has been shot and, you know, assassinated and gone. And it's like, well, fuck, man. And then they went on with the game anyway. It's just like, it was like, I lost $80 on that game.
Damn. Insult to injury.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and so even in your school, you were known as a huge Beatles fan and promoter.
Yeah.
Now, did you have did you find other kindred spirits?
No. I had one friend, my friend James, who's been like my best friend since I was five. He liked that stuff, but that was it. I mean, you know, you can understand that you're eight, right. Nine. Nobody cared about that at the time. So,
well, you're 8 and 9. It's 1980, so they're listening to Saturday Night Fever, Grease soundtrack.
Yeah, like you know, or top 40.
People your age.
Top 40. Like, or if they're listening to music at all, really.
Right. Well, yeah.
Like, for me, it was a focal point.
You're 8 years old. I mean.
I was already like I.
Are
my
you
parents got
playing
me a little
instruments?
Drum set. Yeah, drums. You're I taught myself drum. How to play drums playing along the Beatle records, and I was so into it. I was so excited when I was a little kid. My parents got me a little toy kit that looked like Ringo's, and so I tried. I mean, it had a little kick pedal and everything.
Right.
It was great. I still remember that kit. And then they got me something a little bit better, you know, that I could play on.
Uh-huh.
And that's all I. That was my focus. That's all I did. You know,
nice.
That was it. And
Now, did you play in the school band?
I did. And of course, I learned how to read drum music.
Uh-huh.
That's about as far as I got. My parents took me to a guy in the next town over, a jazz musician, to get lessons. Because they're like, okay, if you're going to do this, you should, you know, it's good that you've learned on your own, but you need to. And I went to this guy, and I remember he had a Vistalite kit, you know, those clear kits, you know? And and I was like, oh, can I play? And he's like, no. You know, like, it was almost like Spinal Tap, like, don't even breathe on them, you know what I mean? And so I was sitting there on the practice pad, and he's like, well, who's your favorite drummer? And I said, Ringo. And he, like, laughed at me. He's like, oh, he's terrible. Blah, blah, blah.
No,
and that was it. I never went back to another lesson.
Right.
I'm like, I don't want to go back. And my mom didn't let me go, which is
anymore.
Great. You know, I appreciate them trying to make me go.
I think he might try to put his hands on me. He doesn't like Ringo. I don't know, man.
Well, you know what I mean? Like, you tell that to a kid, you know what I mean? Like, you encourage him and say, well, that's cool, you know, and
right.
Work on your paradiddles.
Yeah.
You
where is that guy today?
He's dead.
You know, it's crazy, the jazz guys of that era. How much they missed out on, like, I mean, Ringo, you know, like, you know, I think Ringo's fucking fantastic.
Me too.
But he, there's I think it's Buddy Rich on The Tonight Show or something, and he's shitting on Glenn Campbell. And he's saying how Glenn Campbell, you know, all the country stars, do-do-do-do-do-do, and I'm going, man, you just seem so stupid right now.
Yeah.
You just make yourself look like such a moron.
That's ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's such a bad take. You know, and Glenn Campbell, especially, my God.
Yeah,
if
that's what I'm
saying.
If
the only thing he'd ever done was Wichita Lineman, you'd be like, okay, this guy's great.
And, I mean, Glenn Campbell's an amazing guitar player, amazing singer, writer, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, just an incredible musician.
Maybe he was shitting on his drumming.
Glenn Campbell's drumming.
Yeah, maybe that was what Buddy Rich was doing.
Maybe so.
You know.
But so you're playing drums, you're getting into other kinds of music. I mean, this is you know, Bowie is making great records during this time. You know, what other bands were you branching off of the Beatles and getting into?
So it was like all the 60s stuff, obviously, first. You know, so the Beatles, then the Stones, then the Who.
The Kinks, you're a big fan of.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, the Monkees. I'm a huge, ridiculously huge Monkees
fan.
My
wife's a big Monkees fan.
Like, crazy. Like, you know, I will talk your ear off about Mickey Dolenz and his drumming.
Kyle Malanson is a huge Monkees fan. You know,
yes,
drummer?
I know. Yeah, I just saw him the other night, actually.
He's an insane Monkees. He knows everything about him. He could tell you who played on every record, who the session guys were.
Yeah. Oh, we've had discussions about the Monkees before.
That's so
funny. But the contemporary-wise, the Police. I really like the Police.
Okay.
I really like Stuart Copeland.
Right.
Which, you know, it was so busy in that stuff. It's great, you know. And then, you know, Tears for Fears, all that. And around 85, I started getting more like, you know, the Smiths, REM, like, you know, that's when, you know, I was about 12 at that point. So that's when I started listening to more what they, I guess at the time, was like college rock.
Right, you know? Sure, yeah,
so
yeah.
That kind of thing. So that changed things a little bit. But it was all influenced by, you know, the Birds and the Beatles.
Right. So
stuff.
did you kind of back into all that jangle stuff with the 12 string electric guitars and all the Birds and from REM or kind of
I like the Bird stuff first, probably.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Or at least the early Birds. Like, I knew the singles really well, and then I probably went back and really dived into like Younger Than Yesterday and all those records.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? I used to hang out at a record store every day after school called Record Stop. and me and James, and every day we just hang out, and with the guy that was there, who's this guy Mark, who's our friend, but he was like older, but like he tolerated us, you know. He's,
sure, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
he introduced me to the Buzzcocks.
Yeah,
you know, and and the people that own the store, Bruce.
Did he try to rape you?
No. Okay. He's great. And then okay. The people that own the record store, Bruce and his family, Jan, his wife Janet, they were like wonderful people. They eventually hired me, so I got to work in the record store for a long time, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
And it was, man, that was the best. What an education, you know, because I got to listen to so much stuff.
Now, you graduate high school, you're in the band, you go to college?
Yeah, I went to college in Florida.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that was real
weird. Weird.
Yeah,
I went to St. Augustine. Well, you know,
St. Augustine.
Yeah,
that's an all right.
That was cool. No, it was cool. But when I would go south, we'd go on the road trips, you know, and then my parents would drive us down. It would take 2 days. But, like, I still expected there to be, like, dirt roads and like bridges that were out of commission that people would have to jump to get. I honestly had no idea.
From watching Dukes
of Hazzard.
It
sounds so dumb, but like exactly.
Well, you watched the movie Ode to Billy Joel.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But it was cool.
Harlan County Line.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but it was cool.
Smokey and the Bandit.
Smokey and the Bandit. But it was cool, and I met my wife in St. Augustine, which was cool. She was from 20 minutes away from where I grew up on Long Island.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so it was real strange.
So what's the college there?
Flagler College.
Okay.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was good. And I met, you know, I had band there for like 10 years, and that was, you know, we did all right, and it was.
So I'm saying, so you were playing in bands during high school, and.
I played drums in like different cover bands. So it'd be like, you know, we'd play like Jimi Hendrix or like, you know, all kind of. And it was great. You know, it was great.
Learning tunes, getting time in on the bandstand.
Yeah, and learning to play with other people.
Yes.
Right, you know. And then, and then when I went to college, that's when I had a band with like original, like we did originals and wrote stuff and, you know, and all that. And that was pretty cool. You know, I learned a lot.
Now, were you starting to play guitar or keyboards simultaneously at
this
time?
I taught myself guitar. And then I had, you know, my brother-in-law, now my brother-in-law, who is my buddy. We were in a band together, JJ Murphy, who's in a bunch of great bands. Mike and the M-Tones. He's a New York musician. He would show me stuff on the guitar, and then I would play, and like, you know. So over time, I wanted to do, I didn't really care how good I was necessarily, because my favorite guitar player, like, I just wanted to write, you know, and I eventually got good enough, you know what I mean?
Sure,
Yeah, you know how it is, it's just like...
Yeah, well, you know, like Brian Eno explained to us that virtuosity is not the goal.
That's good for me, because I'm not there.
that's really, I mean, that's a thing, but it's not the thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the most important thing. The most important thing is, what can you do with what ability you have? How can you express that? How can you use that to artistic ends?
Right.
Which is where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Now, so you're writing at that time? Are you writing a lot of stuff for the band?
I was.
Are you taking the band over just through your force of personality and creative drive?
Believe it or not, no. I was sort of, we were all like kind of figuring out what to do. And I, but in that band, I just sang.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, which I never ever wanted to sing. I mean, I used to sing when I was a kid all the time, but I didn't want to do that.
Right.
But in that band, well, there was the guitar player, and there was the bassist, there was a drummer, and so that's what I did. And then, you know, but eventually I wanted to, like, play more. And I would, occasionally I'd be allowed to play something in the studio. But eventually, you know, later on, I was kind of like, I really want to be able to play more, you know, on the stuff. So, that was it, really, you know. And then around 2000, I got married in 99, and my wife got a job opportunity over here in Louisiana.
Oh, okay.
We came over to visit.
And you were living in Florida at
that's
the time?
Right. Okay. Yeah. I thought I'd go back to New York or something.
Yeah.
You know, or that we would go back. But she had a job opportunity here. She really wanted it. I felt like I owed her. She came back. She had graduated a year before me, and she came back to Florida for me.
Okay.
And that was really great, you know.
Yeah, man.
And
good
she
girl.
Really wanted that. Yeah, she's wonderful. And so and so we came here. And I'd never been here. You know,
I were ambivalent about New Orleans, never had like a dream as a child, can't wait to grow up.
I was about to see it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and of course, like, you know,
and then
so many great music came from here. So it's like, yeah, it was like
but
that.
It wasn't
was
your music. It wasn't like, you know, something that you were, you know, obsessed with Dixieland jazz. Or,
no, but like I got like now moving here and now I have a much greater appreciation for all that. And I learned a lot. You know, but it was, which was really cool. But like all the, I mean, think about how much rock and roll comes from,
sure.
You know, all the early Little Richard records were recorded right down the street. You know, it's like, And
then all what the Beatles were turned on to. Yes, sure. It's all comes.
Or just the, and then discovering like Lee Dorsey stuff, like other than working in a coal mine, you know what I mean? Like it was just right. Like, oh my gosh, it's fantastic, you know? So that was cool. And then the food.
Sure.
Is unbelievable. It's great. So yeah, so I've been here since 2001.
Okay, like Manny. That's
Well, I've been here before, though.
When did you move? In the 80s?
I moved here in 2000.
Oh, yeah. So right the year after. Yeah.
I was wanting to get out ever since.
Yeah. But Manny married a girl from New Orleans. So
so I'm never leaving.
He never gets to leave. You know, I had a guy who's I actually idolized this guy, great musician, who was calling me up from another town and saying, yeah, I really want you to come move to my town and join my band. And I'm thinking, I can't do it. I'm not allowed to leave New Orleans, man. My parents are in their 80s. My kids are in their 20s. You know, I've lived outside of New Orleans for 3 months in my entire life. It's just not an option, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. But there's something about this place, you know what I mean? Like that. I think I can understand why people are gravitate to it and why they, you know, and it took me a little time, you know, the first couple of years I was here, I really didn't know what to do with myself.
Yeah.
I felt really kind of like bummed out because I really wasn't, I didn't have anything going. So it took a little time.
Didn't know musicians here.
You know, I would just go down. I would go down because we lived on up in on the North Shore.
Oh, okay.
That's where my wife's job office was. So well, I would basically drive down and hang out at the Magic Bus pretty much all the time.
Huh. Okay.
And that was every day. A couple times a week, I'd just go down and hang out at the Magic Bus, walk around, figure out where everything was, drive around.
Because that's the Beatles thing, right?
Remember that record store? It was fantastic, yeah. You know? Yeah, and yeah. It was really cool. So that, I guess, kind of educated myself on where I was.
Okay,
know?
Funny. Yeah. Again, going back to the record store, a safe space for you.
Yes.
So like, I'll meet some like-minded people here eventually.
That's it, exactly. And the Magic Bus was very similar to Record Stop, which was the record store, which I thought was the greatest record store ever. And Magic Bus was similar, had a similar vibe to it.
So. Man, you think of how many bands got started because in the old days, people put up a flyer with pull tabs in a record on a record store bulletin board.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I love this story, Joe. But Manny, I'm looking at the drinks, and it seems like it's about that time.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
And when they hang themselves with their skinny ties, don't ask why. Certain degree, there's comfort in familiarity, where nothing changes but the beat or key. But does it fit a certain pedigree? Trace its lineage to the raspberries. The electric guitars have a bit too much crunch. Is it garage or maybe too hard rock? When they hang themselves with their skinny ties, don't ask why. Change angle with a trebly burst. Sooner or later, both your teeth and ears hurt. If you subscribe to the width of the tide, hope the reviews will give you 5 out of 5. But did you use a Rick and back your guitar? Did you listen to enough Big Star? Do you talk about the burger? Bonus points if you reference shoes. When they hang themselves with their skinny ties, don't ask why.
And we're back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet. I am Renee Coleman, back with our guest, Mr. Joe Adranya. Now, Joe, I know you're somewhat familiar with the show. I think you first contacted me years ago when we first started. You've been aware of it anyway. And, you know, we are a listener-supported operation here. We don't have any corporate sponsors. Not that we would refuse any. Just none are currently in play. But instead we have...
They don't want us. We don't want them.
There you go. There you go.
Basically comes
fuck
down
you guys.
Corporation. Fancy shoes.
The skinny ties.
Yeah.
Fat ties. But But we do accept loose change. We have a sponsor, a longtime sponsor, Loose Change, and people will send in sometimes actual change to the bar here. But usually we use the PayPal and the Venmo links that are in the show notes of every show, as well as all the Facebook posts about the show. And we don't have any people to shout out this week because no one's supported. No one's paying for these cocktails.
We're begging you, please, people.
Coming out of pocket here. That's all right. Yeah. That's all right. We can float it on our own here. I'm having so much fun.
They're good kids.
Yeah.
How many followers do we have now? 18?
Something like that. 18 or 20.
18
But we do, I will say, then we also have the links for a Patreon page. And we do have a handful of patrons that are there supporting us week in and week out. We do appreciate your fidelity. We love you. And also we have the link for the Trouble Men Podcast t-shirts.
Yes.
Those are not flying off the shelves, but they could be. They have infinite supply. Unlimited supply as the
Also, if you want to give to my campaign,
okay,
there's always a bumper sticker you might get, or maybe a yard sign.
Okay, we'll so have to develop a link for that, man.
They could just send it to the bar.
Yeah. Okay, all right. If you want to,
because this is our campaign headquarters.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
So if you want to send anything to help me try to win this finally,
yes, send it care of Manny for Mayor.
Manny for Mayor, Snake and Jake's Bar. New Orleans.
As opposed to the Trouble Men Podcast.
Right.
But let's see. I do want to, and then I also, we always say, follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and rate, review, and subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to it. Give us 5 stars. Cost you nothing. Helps us a lot. Speaking of stars, I want to, the day that this podcast comes out, if you listen to it right that day, that night, a great friend of mine, the great Lorette Velvet from the Panther Burns and the Hellcats,
will be sentenced to death.
She'll be playing July 10th, Thursday, at Chickiwawa. That night will be a big scene over there. Panther Burn associated people, and I will be there, so everybody check that out. And I have to mention that we're here in the heart of the Clempire and Snake and Jake's, and they've instituted, starting last week, it's Tiki Tuesday.
Yes.
Now, we took some photos outside with the tiki torches. So,
and it's now really popular.
Well, it's kind of jumping for the summer here. Now, I don't see a lot of exotic drinks flying off the bar, which is good because I like the simple drinks, those drinks that take...
Well, last week for Tiki Tuesday, the bartender, what's his name again?
Ian.
He was serving up some kind of...
he had some Mai Tais.
Yeah, he had
some
something
other,
going on.
They
were spicy, though. I had a sip of one, and they were too spicy for that Polynesian flavor.
We like to keep it simple, you know.
Yeah,
just
like
the booze and something to get it down with. Yeah. Booze and
ice is the best mixer.
Yes, it is.
You know,
it's classic.
The best mixer.
They have it everywhere. That's the thing.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
Once you learn to drink booze with ice, you're good. You're good, man.
That's it.
So what else? Yes, Tiki Tuesday, and if you stop by Snake and Jake's, I'm guessing they're going to carry that on all summer or until they run out of fuel for the tiki torches, but they do have it's quite lovely. You'll see in the photographs from last week's show and perhaps this one, they have 2 cinder blocks with bamboo tiki torches duct taped to those tiki
classic
torches, separated
classic
by about 8 feet on the edge of the curb there. You'll see it.
If this block goes on fire, we only have Dave to blame.
Right.
He owns this whole block.
Hopefully he's all paid up on his insurance. He's all up to date on his fire insurance. All right, well, enough of that. Back to our guest, the great Mr. Joe Adranya. So, Joe, you're moving here to New Orleans in
2001.
Yeah.
Your band, Junior League. Mm-hmm. When do you formulate that?
So, I had a home recording set up. Mm-hmm. And I just started writing songs that, you know, and I didn't have a band anymore. And so I just recorded at home, just played everything myself because I had everything and I could. So I did it, you know, And I didn't
your
know
your wife's working. You got the whole place to yourself.
Yeah, so I could do that.
No kids.
Not yet. Yeah. No so kids. I was. Yeah. So I was just writing.
So you're watching porno like I do when the wife's gone, right?
Writing songs.
Writing songs to porno. Trying to jerk off while you're
2001.
Pissing.
I don't think they even had porno.
Oh, they had porno. Well,
I mean, it existed, but you know, it wasn't as ubiquitous as it is now.
I was producing some.
Well, yeah, out there, VHS world, but you know, it wasn't like you had it on your smartphone. Anyway, moving on.
Do we even have phones? Yeah, I don't even remember.
No, we didn't. Like
I can't remember.
I remember a friend of mine in 1992, who was a very rich fellow. He had a car phone.
Sure.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah,
and that was crazy.
Big and clunky.
Clunky thing, but we were able to like call people and we'd put them on speaker and stuff like that.
Wow.
And they would go, "Where are you calling me from?" And he said, "The car." And they were like, "Fuck off." You know? And then we'd call our dealer and the dealer would freak out.
It's funny. But you think,
I'm on the way.
All that stuff now, you know, but at the time we were like...
Accurate accent, by the way.
Like, I remember like the first time I saw a VCR, I thought it was like the most incredible thing. Or a microwave.
Right,
you know,
sure.
Like, crap, this is incredible.
My family was the first family on the block to get a VCR.
Really?
Yeah, and it was this fucking huge fucking monstrosity. It was this huge thing, and my dad was all into it, and we taped like an inning of a baseball game. And we said, "Rewind it." And we watched it over that same inning. And we were freaked out.
Yeah, just the fact that you had that control.
Yeah, I was just like, wow.
I know.
It's so cool.
Yeah, it was kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, you probably weren't alive during this era, but Manny and I grew up before phone machines. Like when I was at the beginning of my music career, if you weren't home to get a call about a gig, you missed the call. Now, when I lived at my parents' house, my mother was often there. She would take a message, and then, you know, but then when I lived on my own, before I had an answer machine, it's like people would say, "Oh, yeah, I tried to call you for a gig, and you weren't there, so I went to the next person on the list."
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
Because I don't remember having an answering machine in our house. I don't even remember when in high school, I should say.
And then when you got an answering machine, it was like, what kind of message are you going to leave?
Yeah.
Sure, your outgoing message. Everybody got creative.
Is it
going
to be just straightforward, "Hey, I'm not here, leave a message, beep"?
Do you remember they used to have the commercials where didn't they have a commercial where they sold messages that you could use? You got to wait for the beep.
Right.
You got to leave your name, you got to leave your number.
And then you would like try to get creative and make your own, you know, funny message. And then that would make people not leave a message.
Well, the funny thing, you know what's funny is my son's done that on his phone. I called him one day and he didn't pick up. And all of a sudden he's like, "Hello." And he like affected this weird British accent. And I'm like, "What are you doing?" It was hilarious though. And it went on for like 5 minutes. And I'm like, "This is fantastic." And I think in the back of his mind, he's thinking, "This is so long, I'm going to wait people out." Like, they won't leave the message, probably.
Well, kids, I mean, I think
but
younger...
you can always have the caller ID. You know who called you.
That's right.
You know who called you.
But I mean,
like younger people, I don't think they even will leave a message or listen to your message if you leave one.
They
just go, "Oh, you called me. What are you calling about?" It's like, "Well, I left a message. Explain the whole thing. I have to repeat myself.
Explain the whole thing all over again. Your mother's dead. All right? All right. You need to move back home and take care of me, basically." That kind of thing. They don't want to hear that.
They don't want to hear that now. Anyway, back to you.
They let that go to voicemail.
So how old are your kids?
My son is 13.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a fun age.
Yeah, so he vacillates between "You're cool, Dad," and "I can't be bothered with you, Dad." You know
right,
what I mean?
Like, and "You're cool, Mom," and "Fuck you, Mom."
Yeah, you know, he's just... Yeah. Well, the two of them, like... right now are like, I think they because they have sports as their commonality. I mean, I like football, like but they'll watch like ESPN 8 the Ocho, you know, and then
like
you remember like from like, so they'll watch like the World Badminton World Series, whatever.
Crazy.
You know, I mean, they get into it. So
watch out for that kid.
Well,
he's watching badminton. What's next? Catching butterflies.
Well, I don't know.
Anyway, he seems like a
good kid, Joey.
Joey.
Yeah. So
that's a good Italian
creative
name.
Yeah, exactly.
It's in the rule book. We have
sure,
to.
Yeah, Joey. There you go.
Peter, Paul, or Joey. It's got to be one of those three.
That's right.
But Joey's not a saint, right?
No.
Peter and Paul are saints.
That's right.
Saint Joseph.
Oh, Saint Joseph,
saint.
You're right. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Okay, I guess.
Yikes. Sorry, I was going along with you like, yeah, sure.
See, I'm a confirmed Catholic before I was anything else. I put in my time. So you're in New Orleans. You have all this free time. You're in your home studio. You have developing skills. You're an experienced drummer, but you're getting your sea legs under yourself with the guitar playing. Now I got to say, your records. I was listening to the whole latest record today and was like doing kind of jumping around a survey, and man, they sound so great right from the start.
Thank you.
And I love your vocal approach, that you don't over sing, you don't put a lot of grease on anything, which is like exactly what Alex Chilton would say to do, you know. It's just sing. Don't just like, are you putting something on that? And go, maybe a little bit. Don't do that. just sing the notes. But you know, you have this sensibility that's so cool. I mean, it reminds me at times of you know, so many great things I love. You know, Todd Rundgren, Badfinger.
Yeah, Badfinger.
These brilliant harmonies with the jangling guitars, but also angular, aggressive guitar sounds, and also a real sense of humor about what you're doing, which maybe is part of power pop in general.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about the specific, you know, where you're really at. And well, first of all, I'm going to dump a bunch of stuff out, and you can just weave this into a coherent narrative.
Okay.
So it's like you develop this sensibility, but then you fall in with all these guys in the Southeastern, you know, all these REM affiliated guys, mm-hmm. Scott McCoy, mm-hmm. The Southeastern, you know, I'm guessing that like, Chapel Hill scene is kind of at play in there. At least there's a handful of players that somehow you become associated with. Fill us all in.
Well, I mean, really, honestly, what Scott is my friend. I was a huge fan of his. I loved the Minus Five. Scott's been in the Young Fresh Fellows, the Minus Five. He's played with everybody. He's a brilliant writer, arranger, player. He's just awesome at everything.
Right.
And I was a huge fan of the Minus Five, and they were playing here in New Orleans, and I was so excited. I was like, you know, because in Florida, there weren't a lot of shows that would come through. And so I was like, this is great. So I showed up early, and I was drinking at Kerry's, you know,
uh-huh,
right
there
in the House
Pop,
of Blues. Yeah. Those guys.
The House of Blues?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay.
And it was part of like this big show. It was a bunch of bands. They were all the same guys playing the band. You
uh-huh.
know? And the Minus Five were playing, and I was very, very excited. And I was there early, and those guys got there, and I introduced myself. Total geek move, but I didn't care because I was like, this is great, you know. And they're all really nice. I met Scott McCoy. I met Peter Buck and John Ramberg.
Mm-hmm.
And then when those guys were done with soundcheck, I told them about a record. So I say, hey, by the way, if you're bored, Magic Bus is around the block, you know.
Okay.
And so they came out, and they were like, you want to take us to that record store? I was like, yeah. So we did, and you know, hung out, and those guys were also nice to me, and I was so thrilled, you know. And
sure.
I remember, each of them were really cool. And John Ramberg told me, I'm in a band called the Model Rockets, and he gave me a CD. I mean, they were just awesome. Then they played this show, and it was just the most rocking. It was everything I wanted to do. Like, the songs were great, the singing was great, the playing was great. It was just like, I was like, God damn, you know, this is fantastic. And then after the show, Scott and I talked a bit more, and we exchanged emails, I think, at the time, and stayed in touch. And he's, you know, and so I he's a wonderful guy, and he's been very helpful to me. He's been very generous to me. But he's just a super person. So that, like, you know, anything that I've done that's been cool is really because of him.
Wow. Nice.
You know, he's been a fantastic guy. He's really a good person.
But then you wound up playing drums in that band for a whole bunch of records, right?
Yeah. I mean, as because the Minus Five is like a rotating cast of characters,
uh-huh.
you know. So like it's generally Scott and Peter Buck, but you know, So yeah, Scott would ask me to play if he needed me on certain songs or a certain thing. You know, so there's some records I'm played more on than others. You know, like on the last one, they just put out a new record that's one of the best minus five records ever. I'm not on it at all.
Oh, okay.
You know, but he's got amazing people like Linda Pittman playing drums and Peter Buck playing guitar and Kurt Block playing guitar. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, yeah, that all started because he was coming through opening for Jeff Tweedy,
okay.
And he said, and he emailed me. He's like, "Hey, man, you know, I'm coming through. I'm like, do you want to play? You want to play with me? You want to play drums?" I'm like, "Yeah," you know. And I remember I was so excited and nervous that I moved my drums into this closet. I don't know why I did this, but I moved them into a closet, and I it was just gonna be him and I. So I had to kind of figure out what am I gonna do to accompany him. And so I just practiced it, like, got it, and I got it together, and it went great. And we wound up doing two dates.
That's
that
a
way.
Big closet, was, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Well, it was like I had, you know, it was like one of those things where I had the kick drum in, and I was kind of half out of it. Like it was, yeah, it was a weird setup. But
now,
I don't know
why
did
you do that?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know why. It really made no sense. Looking back, I'm like, I think it was just nervous.
But now you're out of the closet.
Now I'm out of the closet.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. That
makes two of us.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all.
But that's how that all started. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so he's been very helpful to me on my stuff as well. He's just really, like I say, a great guy.
Now you're extremely prolific. You once you start
some
making
would say
these,
a lack of quality control.
These junior league records. I don't know, man. I was going track after track, and it's like, well, that's really cool. That's really cool.
Thank you.
Now, I know you're a huge Big Star fan. You know, mm-hmm. Alex Chilton's band. I used to play.
Oh yeah.
So and now, so I have a few questions associated with that. It's like. First, I was going to say, what's your favorite Big Star record?
Oh, gosh. I think...
If that's hard, we can move on, but...
I don't know. I know everybody... A lot of people say third, you know. It's not mine. I think the second and the first and the second one is kind of tied.
Okay, now...
Not that I don't love third.
Right. No, that tells me a lot, which the third is like the more deconstructed one.
Which I do love that record.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I think now I like it a lot more than I... Like, you know what I mean? Like, the first two records were the ones that grabbed me initially.
Right. Well, they're so shiny and you know, they're so easy to love. You know?
Yeah.
Again, when I started playing with Alex, I hadn't listened to any of that music. I didn't even know about that music.
Really?
Yeah. So, which is one of the things that he liked about me.
Yeah.
He's like, "Oh, you don't know who I am, do you?" I was like, "No." He's like, "Perfect." So I'll move on. What do you think about Like Flies on Sherbert?
You know, I like it. You know, I like Feudalist Tarts.
Okay.
I like,
That's my first record. I
dig that record. I like, I'll tell you what, he did a record. I know this is going to be like, he did a record called Clichés.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, his version of There Will Never Be Another You is my favorite version of that song, period.
Okay.
Like, I like when he does standard stuff like that. Like, I thought
it was
cool.
You know, his dad had the Chet Baker Sings record, and Alex really totally digested that record as a kid, and it's all in there, and he could do all those songs. And
yeah,
I think that's where that's how that song came into it.
Well, and he plays guitar. I mean, he was really a great guitar player.
I think it was Tom Waits said that described Alex as being the Thelonious Monk of the rhythm guitar.
that's a great description. Yeah,
pretty accurate. No, because I was going to ask you, I was just on this line, I was going to say, how much did all you Big Star devotees resent Alex's post-Big Star career?
I didn't.
Did you feel cheated?
None at all, because, well, first of all, I wasn't listening to that stuff when it was out initially, so I didn't have, you know, any kind of, I came to it later.
Okay.
Because of a lot of the bands that I was listening to in the 80s that would reference them, and that's how I kind of got to it late. So no, I didn't at all, because I felt like, you know, I know if I wouldn't want to be straitjacketed into doing one kind of thing. If I wanted to make a noise record, then I'll do it. I don't really care. You know what I mean? Nobody should. Everybody should do what they want.
You know, one of my favorite records that Alex made that I didn't have anything to do with is the record he made with Alan Vega and Ben Vaughn called Cubist Blues.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which they made in a weekend where they were like pulling shit out of the newspaper to get lyrics, you know?
That's awesome.
Alan Vega was just making up lyrics as they were making the tracks. It's a really wonderful record.
That's cool. I'm going to check that out.
You dig that. So moving on, we've come into contact more recently. Maybe the way you're actually on the show now is you recently worked with a friend of ours, someone who's kind of been in the orbit of the Trouble Men podcast for a number of years, our good friend Natasha Sanchez.
Yeah.
And Tom Stern, a guy who I've known since, you know, probably 1982 or something, who has the great Blue Velvet Studio over there on Camp Street, and I've worked there many times. You have become associated with the Blue Velvet Studio, and tell us, so you worked on Natasha's record, you did some production, did some playing.
I did, and on the Tom I've known for a long time. We recorded two records, two records at Tom's, and Tom's mixed a bunch of stuff for me. So I've done other session work with Tom. He's great.
Yeah.
I love Tom. And then Natasha, I've known Natasha for a long time, since like way back at Circle Bar. And she used to have a songwriter night, and she would invite me to play that, which was really nice of her. And one day I don't remember if we went to have lunch or something, and she was telling me she was writing songs, and I was like, oh, what are you working on? And she was telling me, and she was like, I'm not sure what I want to do. I said, well, look, if you need a drummer, I'll play drums, or if you want whatever you want, you know. And she's like, well, yeah. So she played me the songs, and I was like, wow. And I was like, hey, you know, I got an idea, you know. And we just started talking. I was like, you know, if you want, I could work up demos of a couple of these songs if you're looking for a way. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah. And so that's what I did. And then that grew into recording over at Tom's. And it came out great. I think it's a wonderful EP. Natasha's awesome. She's got a great voice. I think she's like, and I love her lyrics. Like, she, watching her play too, she's a really good performer. She brings you right in. Like, okay. You can't, you know what I mean? She's very, I feel like she makes it feel like you're like in her living room, and you're just kind of with her when you're watching her play. It's pretty cool. She's great.
Nice.
With that Bufa's place?
Bufa's.
Oh, it was great. Yeah, we played there playing acoustic.
That place is a ripoff, man.
How so?
Well, because they say, oh, come see a gig, and we go see Natasha play, and then all of a sudden you order a couple drinks, and they charge you $10 to get in.
Oh.
They charge you at the door. They charge you to get in.
Oh, they don't have a doorman.
They don't tell you that.
Oh, I don't
that
know.
That place is a rip.
But you wouldn't have left had you known you were going to have to pay, would you?
I wouldn't have come.
Oh, okay.
If I had to pay.
You're my friend, but I'm not paying the cover charge.
Yeah. I should be on the guest list. I'm okay. Manny Chevrolet. I should get in free.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. I don't know. She seems like a good kid.
Yeah.
She really is.
Natasha.
I think the EP came out really nicely, too.
I don't know.
Yes.
I know she's happy. I think she's happy with
it. Yes. Now, you know, Gardenia Moon, she played on that same thing. I played on a few cuts of her record.
And her record's really good, too.
I think she made a terrific record, man. Yeah.
Me too. She played a great show. We all played the show together.
She'd be playing it from prison, probably.
Well, I might be listening to it from prison.
It was really good. And she played a show one night at Buffa's as well. It was really good. Yeah.
Yeah. My wife went that night. I had a gig myself, which is why I don't show up to a lot of things.
Not
because I'm sitting at home. Well, so this other guy that we're, I think, trying to have on the podcast next week, Jonathan Priedus.
Yeah.
He has this, he's great guitar player, has played in a whole bunch of different bands, plays in this band, The Walrus.
Love The Walrus,
nowadays.
Yeah.
But he has a very successful podcast called Ranking the Beatles.
Yes. Now, I've been on it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I would assume, because you seem like a shoe-in for that podcast. Okay. I haven't been on it, but that makes sense, you know.
It was fun. I mean, like, just because, you know, geek out about the Beatles for an hour, sure.
Sure, know. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
But he's
original.
A super nice guy.
No, he's a good guy, and he's done all kind of interesting things, and hopefully it's going to work out.
Very talented.
Have him on the very next podcast.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah, see, sometimes I like to... you know, find these patterns and
popping it up.
and just the Beatles through line, you know, suddenly, I mean, it wasn't by design. It's just, it reveals itself to me and I go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, like a good record. It's like when you make a record or you're writing a whole bunch of songs. Now, okay, you're a Bowie fan.
Yes.
One of my best friends, huge Bowie fan, is like, what's your favorite Bowie record? And I said, or however he said it, what do you think is the best Bowie record? And I said, Diamond Dogs. He goes, really?
Huh.
And he goes, why is that? I said, because it's so different. It's so cool. It's so Bowie. It's a theme record. It has a beginning. It goes through the whole thing. You know, and as years went by, he said, you know, Renee, now I agree with you.
Yeah.
Now I forget why I brought this up.
No, but that makes sense. You were talking about through lines and stuff. And
right. And now why was I talking about through lines?
Maybe Alzheimer's. Yeah. The Alzheimer's. Yeah. No, the glasses fogging up.
Through lines with the themes. Oh,
with the records,
I know.
Yeah.
Where you have a whole collection of songs, and then you record them, and as you're recording them or maybe looking back and doing sequencing,
you have no idea what you're doing.
To realize, oh, there is this theme here that I didn't even understand. It was not intentional. It wasn't contrived.
Yeah,
but it's obvious in the material.
The last couple of records have had themes, but before that, it was just a random bunch of songs, and then it was a matter of just putting them together like a set list. You know what I mean?
But do you think those they kind of self-organize in a way that
they do.
That actually does have a larger meaning that's cohesive?
Yes, I do. I think before the last couple of records, for me, that was musical more than anything else. Like I'd be listening to a lot of a specific kind of thing. And be like, I want to do something like that. The last couple of records have been more like, it's been on that level. It's easier for me, but like lyrically too. So like I put out a record called Bridge and Tunnel, and that was all about New York.
Right.
And then like the last record, Our Broadcast Day, had like the 70s as a backdrop, you know,
right.
Even if I'm not really talking about the 70s, it's kind of, and then like I'm working on one right now that's about 70% done, and that's seemingly about death.
Okay. Well, it's right around the corner.
But it's a real toe tapper.
Now, what's the difference between a record and an album?
Same thing, synonymous.
So why do they call an album like best album of the year, best record of the year?
When they say best record, they mean single.
Why do they say single? Because they also say this is the new single from a band.
Yeah. Well, they don't even have the. Well, I guess they do have the physical product now. Again, you know, like it's so weird now. It's like everything, you know.
Yeah.
Because a record company is basically the mob, right? Yeah, they're just mobsters.
And neither one really exists in the way that
well, now everybody can just put out whatever they want, you know, which is great.
Which I
think it's cool.
Really, if you ask me. Horrible.
There's no
it's
filter.
Horrible and great. Yeah,
there's no filter. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, I'm an artist. I'm a musician putting out this.
Right.
It sounds
like,
that's how I'm able to
like
do
that Lenoir thing that I saw at Jazz Fest.
Man,
that was the worst thing I ever heard in my life.
Oh, well. You know.
God. And he's supposed to be a big shot. Daniel Lenoir.
He's very successful.
Yeah, he's very successful.
He's done some great work. Yeah, for sure.
That was the worst gig I've ever seen.
Not your cup of tea, yeah. No, I was there at that gig. I thought it was great.
It was like children making up music. It was just horrible.
Wow.
You know, it's like putting a child with a piano, a 2-year-old at a piano.
Okay.
Awful. Let's get him on the show.
Yeah. Well, I hear he's moving back to town, so with this kind of greasing
surely
of the wheel, surely he's going to be anxious to come on the show.
Yeah.
Now,
a fuzzy foreigner, isn't he?
He's from Canada.
Canada. Oh, my God. Well, I like the Canadians.
Yeah, we like the Canadians.
They seem like good kids.
Yeah, no, they're very polite.
Hockey pucks,
You know. Now, we're kind of on the downslope of the podcast
but
a few things I wanted to touch on, kind of continuing the theme, is you know, the 1970s, and you have a lot of references, like, you know, Bridge and Tunnel, and then you have put out this record, Nattering Nabobs.
Yeah.
Now, see, Alex would really like that title because he knows what that is in reference to. Most people do not, because most people don't know anything.
Right.
So Nattering Nabobs of Negativism was a quote from Spiro Agnew, I believe. When he was referring to the press.
Right.
He was attacking the press and their constant criticism.
Right.
So I love the fact that you pull up this very obscure quote by Spiro Agnew.
Yeah. Well, and then also like the idea of Nattering Nabobs not just being the press, but anybody who dares question what the hell is going on.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
And like and
the critical class, yes.
You know, the thing is that, like, you know, what a terrible Spiro Agnew. Horrible.
What kind of name is that? Agnew? What is that?
It's Spiro.
Spiro.
Spiro, but Agnew, is that...
I'm not sure what
English?
We don't know. We'll have to do some research.
Spiro.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, his parents must have had a sense of humor.
He famously had to resign from the vice presidency.
Yeah. Tax evasion or something, right?
And did he do jail time?
I think so.
I think he did some time.
Maryland? It was Maryland tax evasion.
He did like 30 days.
I think he might have did some time. Yeah, but that's how Jerry Ford wound up getting the vice presidency.
Yep.
Right.
Look it up, people. It's
there.
History is your friend. Yeah. You know, it's all there.
Exactly.
Now,
it depends who writes it.
Well, you know, the victor, usually. That's what. Now, again, touching on other...
Was Spiro a victor, though? Because he went to jail.
No. I'm saying history is written by the victors.
Oh. Yeah.
It wasn't written by Spiro Agnew. This movie, The Ice...
H.R. Haldeman. I remember that.
Oh, yeah. Haldeman. Sure,
yeah.
Now, what did H.R. stand for, I wonder?
I don't know. Yeah. Harry Reasoner Haldeman.
Harry Reasoner Haldeman's good.
Sounds like a tax company, H.R. Haldeman.
It does.
We'll do your taxes.
Or a law firm, yeah. The Ice Storm. You familiar with that movie?
Yes.
That's
so funny that you bring that up.
I've lived that movie many times.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
That was in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
Really?
Thinking about some of the, like especially 1973 Nervous Breakdown.
Well, that's what, when I was listening to that record today, I was thinking, I got to ask him about The Ice Storm because all these themes of, you know, the me generation, the ennui that we all felt, the key parties, the grasping at bohemia from suburbia, only to find that there's nothing there. That's not going to be your salvation, you know.
There was a book called 1973 Nervous Breakdown, written by I'm trying to remember the author's name, Andreas Killen, maybe.
Okay.
But the book basically the premise is that like the modern world began in 1973. That everything that we're used to now, reality TV and the terrorism as we know it, all these kind of things started in 1973. That was the, and so that kind of informed some of this.
I just watched September 5th.
Yeah. So,
but yeah,
those two things together were definitely kind of, you know, and usually lyrics, I'm sort of like, you know, I always feel like that's the weak spot. And the last couple, like in that one, I felt like, nah, this is all right. This is good.
No, they're great, man.
Thank you.
And also just to getting back to the humor of it, your song Skinny Ties, that skewers power pop or is a parody of all the power pop conventions. Hilarious, man. Alex would love that.
Well, I mean, I remember online there was an argument going on about what is and isn't power pop. And people were like really irate. And it was just like, this is not that important. I mean, so I thought it was hilarious. And also just the idea that like, you don't, again, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. You don't have to do the same thing over and over. And if you don't want to do it or you don't feel like doing it, you want to make Metal Machine music, then go do that.
Yeah.
Even if you've made the poppy, if you're Bobby Sherman and you want to make Metal Machine music,
sure.
Great, do it. You know what I mean? And I just tried to throw, I threw as many power pop cliches musically in there as I could, and and also mentioning every power pop band I could think of.
Hilarious, man. I have this friend, you may know this guy, Jay Gonzalez.
Yeah. I don't know him, but we have mutual friends.
He is as much of a power pop maven as you are, and he would, if he doesn't know that song, I'll play it for him. He's going to love it.
He
man.
Did a great, you know how he plays, sometimes he'll post songs that he plays like on his Instagram. Or he did a song that's one of my favorite songs. He did a beautiful version of it. Do you remember Sky High by Jigsaw? Do you remember that song, Sky High?
That was a disco
song. You've blown it all, sky.
He did
the best version of it. It was incredible. Yeah. Incredible.
He's into like everything from all the stuff you're talking about, including like the guys with the kilts.
The Bay City Rollers.
Bay City Rollers. He's into the Archies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's great. I love that stuff. Yeah. That's
all
so
right.
Funny.
I'm going to have to hook you guys up, man. All right, well, I think that's about it, man.
thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so much fun.
Yeah. What a fantastic
good luck driving
having you on here.
Thank you.
Well, you're fucked up, man. It's okay. You seem like a good guy.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Joe. Well, as always on the Trouble Men podcast, we like to say trouble never ends.
But the struggle continues. Good night.
Good night.
The modern world is taking hold. Everything coming to a head. Point to where the past is truly dead. It won't take long now to unfold. If I could be so bold. Nervous breakdown. Are we the Bradys of the lounge? G.I. Joe or Ziggy Stardust? Getting stoned in woods and parking lots and thinking we have somehow changed, but we aren't really free. 73, nervous breakdown. Oh, the world is ending. Oh, the world's on fire. We've said it so much, now it feels like it's alive. And the only thing difference when I watch the news. Nervous breakdown.